Hello, you're listening to Crossing the Desert. This podcast is a reality series about how I build my small business in the Emirates. You will hear my calls to friends, the sounds of Dubai Street, and most importantly, the stories of entrepreneurs who opened a business and settled here in the Emirates. In each episode, I interview people from India, Egypt, Palestine, Caribbean Islands, UK, Russia. Today, it's New Zealand. And I can only imagine what awaits us in the future episode. The podcast is brought to you by Fortis, the omnichannel platform that integrates POS, CRM, orders, payments, and loyalty programs for small and medium-sized businesses. I'm Isaac. I came to Dubai to put down my roots here. The stories of entrepreneurs who have already succeeded here will help me on my way. In this episode, you'll hear the story of entrepreneurs who organized the manufacturing of their product. I'm talking to Simona. She's the co-owner of Botanis, brand of non-toxic, eco-friendly, and refillable home care products. And she's starting with why the brand was created.
It's something that a lot of people don't know, actually. The cleaning industry is really highly unregulated. There are tens of thousands of ingredients that go untested that are used in everyday products, not just cleaning, but personal care products as well, home care products. As a company, you can put a bunch of different chemicals in your product and just encapsulate it in this catch-all term fragrance and put that on the list, but no one can actually know what exact ingredients are under that term. And also fragrance is perceived as such an innocent ingredient on list, but in fact, it's one of the most toxic ingredients. And the fact that it's mostly produced from petrochemicals and chemicals that, you know, make it linger in the air for longer, on your body for longer and things like that. There's a lot of, you know, conventional products out there that really can be detrimental to our health when used over a long period of time, as a lot of these products are. We chose the route of being really, really transparent about what's in our ingredients. It's on the website. Each product page has the specific ingredients listed. It's obviously on the bottles, on the products themselves. So if somebody turns the bottle around and they read, there's a full ingredients list, and in brackets, we will actually put what that is. And also, all of our products have refills. The point of our glass bottles is that they're refillable. So there's no single use. You buy your original bottle and you refill them with the bulk refills that we have. And also, they smelt like a beauty product. They smelt amazing with essential oils. And then you start to think about, you know, taking care and cleaning, taking care of your home and cleaning a little bit differently.
Simona grew up in New Zealand. This place is absolutely in my bucket list. And when Simona talks about it, I want to go there even more.
It's a really beautiful country. It's very outdoorsy, very green. So from a really early age, I was encouraged to be, well, we all were encouraged to be eco-friendly, to not be wasteful, to recycle properly. I mean, the systems and infrastructure there for that is so good. And if you don't, it's extremely frowned upon. So it's something that I've almost, you know, grown up with from a very young age. And that's one of the things that kind of naturally drew me to working on something like The Botanist and kind of carrying that over into my work and helping people to reduce waste and make reducing waste with home care as easy as possible. I was 23 years old when the idea to move to Dubai was kind of popped up, and it was with my partner at the time. Actually, he was presented with a job opportunity, and in New Zealand, there's something called an OE that a lot of sort of young people embark on once they finish university, typically, and basically it's an overseas experience, and you know, they pack up and go away for a couple of years. So you know, a lot of people end up in the UK or other parts of Europe. They do a couple of years and then they come back, because New Zealand is absolutely gorgeous, amazing place. But it is really, really far away, really quite isolated from the rest of the world. So I think at some point, a lot of people get the itch to, you know, go somewhere further, explore something different. And then they usually do come back. So that was my plan. And I thought, oh, Dubai, that's pretty exotic. And I know absolutely nothing about Dubai, but let's do it. and so off I went. And, you know, with the same plan to go for a couple of years, come back to New Zealand and all of that. And yeah, obviously that didn't quite work out according to plan. 14 years later, I'm still here. But that was the initial reason. It was more for a bit of an adventure. Like I said, I didn't know anything about the place. I didn't know anyone in Dubai at that point. And it was obviously quite a different place. There's been so much development since then as well. Definitely for me, the adjustment from a very outdoorsy green environment to a sand pit was for sure the hardest adjustment. And also, you know, I was 23. I, you know, have a different outlook on things when you're that young. You don't appreciate necessarily the same things that we appreciate now. So it took, I was also focusing, I feel, a lot on the differences and almost like the negative that I perceived as the negatives. So, you know, there's so much sand everywhere. Where's the grass? Where's this? Where's that? So it was definitely, you know, like an adjustment from that perspective. I think I arrived in February, so weather-wise it was okay. So it's not like the heat was the main issue to begin with. But it was just that. I was just so used to being surrounded by nature. And that was eventually, over time, of course, I came to appreciate the nature that Dubai and the UAE does have to offer. It's different to where I came from, but there's obviously beauty in that as well. But it took me a while to come to terms with that, I would say. And it took actually a couple of years to really start to find my place here and enjoy my time here. And then once I did, it's been an amazing, amazing time since then.
Simona already had a career in marketing, so her first plan in Dubai was to join a local company as a marketing specialist.
It took me a couple of months to find my first role, and it was at a small PR agency. And it was actually perfect because it was a, you know, a small company full of all female. So it was really nice and easy to make friends. Everybody was really lovely. You know, I was at that first job for about 4 years. So it was a good place to start to sort of build my career in Dubai. I always had thoughts of how much longer am I going to be here? Maybe a few years ago, I think I went through a patch where I was probably more seriously considering that. You know, at that point, I met my now husband. So that was a whole kind of new chapter that began for us. And then, you know, something always kind of is around the corner in Dubai that kind of keeps you here.
So true. I mean, that is so true. Every time I think maybe it's time for me to leave, Dubai gives me an interesting opportunity and I just cannot resist. And in Simona's story, Dubai is about to give her an idea for business. When she met Ruby.
I met my business partner and founder of The Botanist, Ruby, a few years ago, three and a half years ago. So she is the one that originally created the initial few products and started the brand. So she was struggling to find non-toxic cleaning products. She had young children at home. She also is into healthy living, wellness, and looking after her health. She'd done a course in nutrition and you know, things to kind of enable you to make healthier decisions for your family. But having moved to Dubai herself, she couldn't find anything on the market that was super clean in terms of the cleaning products that she would like to use at home. So eventually she started to make her own, and she started to just for herself, for use at home. And then she got some good feedback from her friends and started to kind of, you know, share it around and more good feedback. And eventually she said, you know, I'm going to, you know, set up a little online store and sell this stuff. So when we met, it was a very early stage. There was, a small selection of cleaning products. It was very much focused on the cleaning category. And there was these beautiful products, really, you know, glass bottles, aesthetically very lovely, super clean ingredients, scented with essential oils, like really like unlike anything that was available on the market at that time. And we met my husband. He runs a digital marketing agency. I obviously have a marketing background. And we met through a running group that we were all a part of. And my husband's trainer, actually, he knew Ruby, and he knew that she was looking for a bit of help. She wasn't quite sure where to take the business. She needed some help with marketing. She didn't quite know how to get to that next step. So he tapped my husband for a little bit of help. So my husband met with Ruby and got to know her a little bit and basically started helping her through the agency with some digital marketing. And as a result, she gave him a lovely box of the products. He brought them home for us, and I then started to use them. And I really got to like learn, you know, about them. I really thought they were such an amazing product. And it got me really researching a little bit and thinking about the products that we have been using at home for cleaning. And while, you know, I've, as I mentioned earlier, I've always been quite health conscious, the cleaning products, I will say I should have paid more attention to what we're using at home, but because there was a lack of, you know, availability of cleaner products on the market, I just kind of made do with what was there. Then I started to do some research because I was like, these products are amazing and they smell amazing. And I feel like really not, you know, when you use the chemical cleaning products, there's a certain heaviness to them. My nose was feeling a little bit, you know, offended, my headaches, things like that. So it didn't feel nice when I was using them. You always kind of feel like you have to leave the room. These ones, it was completely different. So I started to do some research. I learned quite a lot. And what I learned was, you know, quite shocking. Long story short, we had the idea to approach Ruby to see if she would be open to us buying into the brand and working together as co-founders. My husband and I were supposed to get married at that point, but obviously COVID happened around that time. And so we didn't have our wedding, and we just thought, look, to be honest, we were a bit fatigued by the wedding planning process by that point. So we said, look, why don't we just not have a wedding and put that budget into this? It's something that we felt really, really passionate about, that I was like, I would absolutely love to work on this. And I can see that we would make a really, really good team because our skill sets complemented each other. Ruby didn't know how to take it to that next level. We did. We felt like we could add a lot of value. And, you know, personally, in terms of the beliefs and values that I had, it aligned so perfectly with that. So I was just like, I would love to work on this. So we approached her with that idea, and she was on board. So when we met, actually, it was a matter of Ruby making these products in her kitchen. So it was very, very, you know, small scale, very handmade, very, very small batches. So that's where it was at that stage. Now, actually, shortly after we began working together and joined forces and, you know, formed the company and everything, we had an opportunity to participate in the Spinneys Local Business Incubator Program, which is a really amazing program they do for local brands. It was almost like a Dragon's Den type process where you go and pitch your idea, and then they shortlist, and then eventually the top, I think it was 20 brands or something like that, were launched on Spinneys shelves, reducing the usually huge barriers to entry for small brands getting into supermarkets. So it's a really, really amazing initiative. And we were participating in the first round, the first year that they did it. And we were lucky enough to be selected as one of the finalists.
Do you remember that entrepreneur from the previous episode, Aisha, already told us about this incubator? This is an incubation program from a large supermarket, Spinneys, and it gives their residents space on the shelves in their stores, which is a cool thing for a startup business. But you also probably remember that for this program, it's not enough to just have a couple of products in production on a balcony. You need a full range of products and sufficient capacity to fill the shelves of the supermarket. So, how did Simone and Ruby organize production?
We ended up deciding to get our own manufacturing space, which is still there in DIP, still there today. And still, our process was very manual, very artisanal, very handmade. A lot of our products, the base for them is Castile soap, which is basically a very, very old way of making soap. You're using vegetable oils, plant-based, very natural process, no harmful chemicals, no, obviously that's the ethos of our entire brand, but it was a very sort of artisanal process. So we got the equipment that we needed to do the small batches that we were doing at the time, but at this new space in DIP. Obviously, that was early stage, but I will say our costs were higher. We had made some decisions in a very sort of quick way. It's obviously more costly to hire a space, to pay rent, to do all of these things for a small brand. Our rent was, upwards of 50,000 dirhams annually. For a small business, that's just starting out. That's obviously not a small amount. We had to hire staff, full-time staff to help with the production. and the packing and the labeling and all of that. We had, obviously you have insurance for the space. You have all the equipment that all adds up. But it also, in retrospect, it was a good decision because it gave us the flexibility to move really quickly, to try different scents, different lines, different seasonal things in a very small quantities, which we could then kind of test and see if our customers like them before we maybe launch a larger production. We needed some more data to understand which of the products are going to move faster, which is the one that we need to increase production on. But at the time, we were like, have we done this wrong? The cost is so high. But looking back, it was actually a really, really good thing because it really enabled us to test and to experiment a little bit and to really find what's working and what's maybe not and tweak accordingly.
I'm really into the strategy itself. You know, when you start small, you test something, some hypothesis that you have, and only afterwards when it works, you tweak and scale. And in my opinion, for a small business, it's very smart. And as an example, I want to tell you about two of my entrepreneur friends. One of my friends decided to launch and to have a hot dog restaurant in Moscow. And that was his first business. So he believed that everything had to be done very thoroughly. He needed to cover everything in advance. So he rented a space on the traffic in the city center. He had that design project that he developed and did some renovations. He bought the best equipment ever possible for the kitchen. In short, he launched thoroughly, let's say it that way. But when eventually he opened the doors to visitors, it turned out that there was a mistake with the product itself because no one wants to eat restaurant quality hot dogs for like 30 euros per one. And it doesn't matter whether that's the fancy place on the traffic nor the, you know, new equipment. Nothing saved him because he just went broke. And as an example, I have another friend who actually did the opposite because she wanted to open a coffee shop. But first, she wanted to see whether people would like it, if they would want to pay 4 euros for it, and if this was the right location. So as I say, you never know until you try. And she agreed with the landlord on a trial. She went very simple. She put a table right outside. She put a coffee machine on it and started making coffee before she had invested a huge budget in this business. And by the end of the week, she already knew the answer to the main question that was pounding her head. Is it worth investing in and developing the business? As it turned out, yes. And I think this is a very cool approach because it doesn't matter whether you choose an equipment or a business location or a marketing channel. You should first test the waters and not make big bets just right away. I talked about it with JP, Forte's marketing director. And JP says the same thing. You don't have to invest in your online store right away to pay a designer, developer, targetologist. To start, it may be enough to make an online catalog, write in Fortis and send a link to customers. And only if it starts working and you feel the pull from the market, then invest in it and finish it.
Starting to sell with Fortis takes a couple of days. And that's just because we have to send a payment terminal to our customers in order for them to then start accepting card payments. But uploading your products onto your catalog, this is something that you can do straight away after you've signed up with Fortis. So for example, because Fortis offers payment links and payment gateways, those small business owners are able to now sell online. Fortis has a built-in online catalog that enables those small merchants to share their catalog with their customers through a simple link. And then those customers are able to put in an order and pay for it also on Fortis. And that's without any additional tool.
I like Fortis' ability to grow with the business. You start very small, just get payment terminal and fill in your catalog. Bam! And you already have a simple online store. Of course, you can then develop and tweak it, but from the very first days, you already have a working thing. And it seems to me that the ability to move step by step and flexibility is what distinguishes a small business. And what was the next step for Simona? So she already had her products, manufacturing, sales through Spinius, and she had her online store. She needed to expand sales. They bet on mostly on social networks. And one thing about social networks worked especially well.
We actually had a lot of user-generated content in the early days because there was nothing like this on the market, and certainly not the way that it was presented. When they received the delivery, it looked like a beauty product. So, you know, our customers were so amazing. They would post so much on social media when they received their packages. They would take videos and photos and post about them. That was a lot of how the kind of social media buzz, I would say, started. And we would obviously amplify that on our channel. But that was a really nice, unexpected element of it because it was, you know, it was like we had all these mini brand ambassadors up. When have I ever seen people posting about their cleaning products? Never. So this is quite amazing.
It looks like we found a very common hack for small businesses because usually businesses, small businesses, they don't have big marketing budget. So to make their products a bit unusual or a bit strange by the visuals and the appearance, that would drive the user-generated content UGC. I mean, we can remember Washta Halidi from the fourth episode with the pure olive oil blue bottle. Some people even criticized her for choosing this color or this material for the bottle. Or take into account Aisha from the seventh episode and her beauty treatment products that are made in the cupcake images, right? So the whole idea is that that provokes emotions. And as a result, because it's unusual, it's a bit strange, it provokes emotions, and it creates that eagerness for customers to share it in their social media for free. I mean, like, people do that for free. You know, you don't even need to prepare some stories or some content or pay for advertisement at the beginning, because people would love to share it. And that's an incredible marketing hack for small businesses.
Because everything happens so quickly, maybe because of the excitement of all that, we probably bypass that very, very important step. It almost sounds a bit ridiculous because why would you? Obviously, you should do that. But we should have probably spent a bit more time making sure, you know, the numbers worked and understanding a little bit more about retail margins and how much they would ask of us. Like, we didn't really know that much at that stage. So what we thought was completely off, it was way higher. We had, you know, I think something like 25% in our heads, and in reality it's more like 40 to 50. and that's still good. As we grew and as our capacity became less and less, we went to search for a manufacturing partner. There's two ways of doing it. A brand can go to a manufacturer and say, I want to have a lotion, and you come up with the formula and we just stick our brand name on it and we sell it as X brand. But they're not involved in the formulation process, you know, in terms of these are the ingredients that we want, this is the formulation, this is the process, and they don't own that formula either, right? So they basically just buy it and sell it under X brand. That is widely available around the world here. And that's what I would say is mostly done. And the other way is that as a brand, you develop your own formulation and you own that formulation and you just select a partner to manufacture it for you. But you are the owner of the formulation and they cannot manufacture it for anybody else other than your brand. Right? So this is what we did. And we took a super long time to find, you know, speaking about the lotion specifically, because that is the one that we started with in terms of outsourcing production. It took a really long time to find the right partner because we had the formulation. We gave it, you know, there was a couple others that we tried to work with that either tried to take ownership of it, which was, you know, to us, an absolute no-go because we spend so much time developing it. And so then why would you then take ownership of it? And, you know, sometimes these things happen. You're a small brand. They kind of think that maybe you don't know any better and this is how it is. And then they also you know, we have very specific criteria as a brand that obviously it's all natural. We don't use these products. We don't use synthetic products. We don't use artificial fragrance. There's a lot of, and there's also some ingredients I would say that are like a little bit borderline. You know, a lot of brands that do position themselves as clean and green can get away with using these ingredients that we were very adamant we weren't going to use. We give an approved list of suppliers to the partner and they purchase direct from them. They cannot go outside of that list because, you know, it's the same as the formulation. It's got to be right. And we've selected this supplier and this ingredient from this company. And oftentimes if you change the supplier, the quality can be different. So it's definitely a huge thing to make sure that the supplier list is approved and that they're only purchasing from the approved supplier list. So that's how we work with that. There are some raw materials that come direct to us that we would provide to GMT. And then there are some that they purchase direct and it goes direct to them. Some partners, when we were at that early kind of sampling process, that kind of took the liberty to adjust the formula a little bit outside of our parameters. And so we knew then that was not the right part of it. And it was not the right in terms of texture, you know, user experience and any of that. We had a sample made for the lotion with a previous potential manufacturer. And when I had rubbed it on my hands, it basically left like little bits of, little bits of lotion. It kind of solidified almost onto my hands. And it was like the cream went into like a powder. And I was like, what on earth is happening here? It was very, very bizarre. But it also was because they had, for some reason, decided to tweak the formula. But of course, at that point, you do realize that that's probably not the right way to go. And that's why you go through the sampling process. And that's why it takes so long, because you obviously want to make sure that when you push go on something, it is exactly as you want it, that it's super right, and that it's aligned to your brand values, standards of quality and everything, because it's such a huge thing to put trust into having manufactured our own products for, you know, almost two years at that point. It's such a big thing to then go to that next step and to give someone else that, yes, of course, we're in control of the formulations and we check the quality and everything, but it's a big thing to be like, okay, now you produce this for us, because, you know, it's our baby. And when it's under our roof, you control everything. And when you outsource it, then you don't lose the control, because again, there's quality control, but you know what I mean? It's kind of a big step for us. So that's why it takes so long, because you want to make sure that we've nailed this. It's the right company to work with. They listen. That's the most important thing. They listen. They adjust as necessary. Like everything, it's just making sure the relationship is super good as well. And so today, where we're at is we manufacture what we can at our facility, and we have a manufacturing partner that manufactures some of our products. You know, for example, we have a hand and body lotion. Now, in order, that formulation was developed by us. It took us a really, really long time. And in the end, we had this amazing formula. But in order to manufacture that at scale, you need very specialized equipment, very specialized processes. You know, it needs to be in a different setting. So that's initially how we started working with our manufacturing partner, because they do have all of that already. And so they just produce our formulation with their equipment, their expertise, their staff, etc. It took, I would say, a year and a half to find the right partner, because the process is so long, you know, to get a sample, it gets not right, do this, da, da, da. And sometimes maybe there was a bit of tweaking in terms of quantity of the ingredients and just getting the right texture and feel. But at the end of the day, it was our formulation that we'd spent a really long time developing. And yes, maybe there needs to be a little bit of assistance from the manufacturer to just make sure that the feel is correct. Maybe there needs to be a little adjustment in terms of quantities, things like that. But that doesn't mean you own the formulation. That doesn't mean that, you know, 99.9% of the work that we've done is then, you know, owned by you. That's obviously the route we've decided to take. And we did find the right partner, and we have a really, really amazing relationship with them, really amazing product. And we've since, as we've grown and the other products have increased in value, volume, we've had to outsource some of the production to them as well for other products. We work with a manufacturer called GMT, and they are based in DIP, and they were also recently open, and therefore, very, very helpful, very a little bit more flexible in terms of minimum order quantities, which for us was absolutely perfect. Or for any small brand, is absolutely perfect. So it was really just a matter of research, talking to, colleagues in the industry, talking to suppliers. There's a couple of trade shows as well that we'd attended that you kind of learn who's coming onto the market. So there's really no one place or one thing so many things. It's just a combination of conversations and trying to figure out the right information.
I need to say that this is the last episode of the season. And this exact episode and this story make me question what entrepreneurship even means. I think I've chosen a very interesting time to build business because all of that makes me reimagine and rethink what actually entrepreneurship means. I mean, I'll explain. As an example, right? My dad, at his time, to build a business, it wasn't easier. Of course not. But I think it was more understandable what entrepreneur role is. If you're a restaurateur, then you have a kitchen, you have a restaurant hall. Kitchen is responsible for cooking. In the restaurant halls, the tables are being served. People enjoy their meals. And entrepreneur is responsible for making a product. But what happens now? I mean, restaurateur doesn't need a hall anymore or a place for people to eat because we have dark kitchens now. A dark kitchen, it's a fully equipped commercial kitchen that specializes in producing food exclusively for delivery without any dining area. And you don't need any couriers. You can use aggregator. And you don't even need a kitchen itself because you can outsource the production or manufacturing and just to buy ready food from someone who uses dark kitchen. And you can be a restaurateur without any hall or without any kitchen itself. I guess if I say that to my dad, he would be extremely surprised. And this is exactly what Simona told us about. I mean, you can own a home care product, but it doesn't necessarily mean that you own production or manufacturing. Moreover, you can even not own any formula. And it feels like entrepreneurship is releasing itself, frees itself from one function to another. And it makes me personally think, what is there to left? And what is the essence of entrepreneurship? And yes, this is the last episode of the first season. The second season will start in September. I will come back with more stories from entrepreneurs who set their businesses in Dubai. See you in the next season. You're listening to Crossing the Desert, podcast by Fortis. Fortis helps seamlessly connect businesses and their customers and run the business. It assists in attracting and retaining customers, selling products and services, accepting payments both online and in-store, and managing finances and personnel. Join Fortis social media. Links are in the episode description. Follow our podcast or add it to your favorites. Give us 5 stars or a heart and leave us a comment. This will help other listeners find out about us and we'll be pleased. And see you in the next season. Production by Hatchup Podcast Studio. Showrunners Alexandra Volkova and Yelena Volkova. Producer Daria Sanikova. Scriptwriter and editor Yelena Volkova. Sound designer Mikhail Vasiliev. And I am your host, Isaac Delonin.